Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show today. My name is Ted Jenkin. I'm going to be one of your co-hosts today for a very exciting new show. You're going to get tremendous stuff called The Shrimp Tank. We are sort of the smaller version of The Shark Tank, but we're going to be highlighting some unbelievable things in the upcoming months as you join us, not only interviewing some of the brightest and best entrepreneurs, not only in the city of Atlanta, but all across the United States. But we are also going to bring in, yes, college students and high school students to essentially bring their business idea to the tank. And much like you see on TV, a lot of these business owners don't know what they're going to be dealing with, whether it's trademarking rights or how to get the business to scale in size, or how to deal with employees. And you see sometimes that even people on TV like Mr. Wonderful punish them. Well, we may have to punish them here too in the tank. So I am going to be joined every week by my co-host here, Chris Hanks. He's not only the founder, but also the executive director of the KSU Entrepreneurship Center. I'm going to have him talk to you about that for just a little bit before we bring on our guests. And I am excited today because for those of you that don't know Duffy Realty of Atlanta, to me, it is the single best real estate company in the city. It has done unbelievable. Not only is Rhonda Duffy the number one real estate agent in the United States, but she has built some unbelievable stuff in terms of marketing that you're going to hear today. Frank Duffy has been a personal friend of mine for a long time. I'm expecting Frank to give us some of those anecdotes today that you will not get on any other show or program ever. But we're very excited to bring this content to you. It's nothing like you've ever seen before. There are a lot of programs out there that give you information about businesses, but you're actually going to hear and see people actually pitch their business ideas and on the spot have us give us that feedback of what to do in their business. So I wanted to bring in Chris. And Chris, would you mind telling people before we get started just what's going on at KSU and the excitement that's happening in the state of Georgia with entrepreneurship?
Yeah, Kennesaw State University, it's so exciting to build something that is really designed to transform people through entrepreneurship. We're leading the charge as far as bringing the best in entrepreneurship to Kennesaw State. We just instituted a minor and hopefully in working our way towards a major in entrepreneurship and being the only one in the state of Georgia. And it is going to be the destination point for people who are serious about entrepreneurship.
That's pretty exciting stuff. And so are there many schools that have an accreditation for entrepreneurship in the United States?
There's a few out there. There are not any in the state of Georgia. I believe there's only one other in the Southeast. So wow. We will have the be one of the few places where a student can actually come and major in entrepreneurship.
Well, I want to bring Frank and Ron in just to talk about entrepreneurship before we talk to them about their business, because it's interesting. When we went to college, there are degrees that you can get and still today on accounting, finance, liberal arts, which I don't even know what that means anymore. It means you probably work at Starbucks when you graduate. But, you know, would you have gone to get an accreditation in entrepreneurship and have even existed many, many moons ago?
I think I would have, for sure, because, you know, owning your own business, making your own rules, yes, it's scary, but boy, it's fun. Like this morning, I was laying in bed thinking, I don't have anywhere to go, right? I mean, you know, it's just those types of opportunities. But then also, you know, as long as it's legal, you can put it in place. And I think that's a huge win for your personal goals and your personal opportunities in life.
I've learned more in a week in business than I did my entire 9 years at college at LSU. you know, my journalism degree really hasn't gotten me much in life, but what it has given me the ability is actually to be entertaining at cocktail parties. But what really has gotten us juiced is the fact that, again, entrepreneurs, we're risk takers, we're professional gamblers. We're out here, again, every day trying to come up with better ways to run our business. And every day is different.
And making our own rules.
Exciting. Yeah.
Making our own rules.
Did you have the t-shirt that said college on it? It was the Belushi t-shirt that had
9 years down the drain.
Well, hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank here on Business Radio X. I'm Ted Jenkin, your co-host, along with Chris Hanks. And I wanted to formally introduce Rhonda and Frank Duffy. I have known them for a long time and have seen their business grow exponentially. But when you talk about getting into a business, the question is, what makes a business successful? And we're going to get into how they made their business successful. But part of that sense of differentiating in an industry where it's sort of the sea of sameness is to create a model like nobody else has out there, or even sometimes, even if it's only 10% different, it is something that can make your business explode. And so I've seen their business grow leaps and bounds over the years. I remember tracking Rhonda on the charts, going from number 10 to number 6, and now number 1 in the country. And I want you to think about that in the highly competitive world of residential real estate. To get to be number 1 in the country is amazing. So this, for everyone listening today or whoever listens to the podcast after or see our video that we're going to put up on YouTube on the Shrimp Tank, you really need to pay attention and take some notes down. I have learned a ton personally in business from the Duffys over the years. I probably owe them a few bucks, but...
Yes, I'm still waiting.
For the royalty check?
That's right.
So how did the idea come about even to start the model that you have as Duffy Realty today?
Listening to the consumer. Okay, so, you know, before we started this broadcast a minute ago, we said, hey, you know, there's a problem out there that we need, and we all got excited about it. But then, you know, when you hear a problem, you actually have to take action. Does that make sense?
No, definitely.
So the big difference, I think, between maybe Duffy Realty's start or my mindset, and certainly Frank's mindset as well, is that when we see an opportunity, we don't sit down and do a business plan and ponder it for 4 months, right? We take immediate action. And I will deliver something to the marketplace as a C product and then tweak it to be an A. I'm not going to get all analytical on making a system in place, because you're going to be tweaking that all the time. So a lot of this is just putting on a blindfold and charging. Does that make sense? It's not sit down, do a business plan, do a bunch of rules, talk to a bunch of family members, see what's going on. And I know that that is a structure of most businesses, but I think there is a fine balance to that.
But it's not being so risky that you're doing something that's not prudent. Every step that we've taken in our business now over 13 years has been a small step. It's never been a jump over a chasm. We've never leveraged ourselves to where we've been in a dangerous position or dangerous situation. So yes, it's kind of with blinders on going forward, but it's calculated steps. It's
right.
Calculated risks that we're taking.
I'm curious, and I want to ask Chris too what he thinks about this, but one of the things that I hear you saying, and I think I've learned this in business myself, is that every new business owner often thinks about building an A product. But the question is it smarter sometimes to build a C product and take that to market first and fix it along the way? Or is it better to perfect this mousetrap of what you think is going to change your industry or the world and then take the product from there?
Perfection.
Well, who dictates it's an A product? The consumer. Your consumer dictates it's an A product. But what I find business owners doing is trying to build an A product that they're in love with. You can't be in love with your product. You've got to be in love with your client.
Absolutely. And, you know, and action trumps everything in entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And our customers will tell us how to run the business if we just listen closely. And sometimes we fail to listen. So if we build it, and I know it's trendy now to go with minimal viable products and MVPs, as they tend to talk about, but getting it out there and then listening to the customer and adapting the product or the service around the consumer versus the field of dream strategy, which is, you know, if you build it, they will come.
Right. And I think a lot of people get embarrassed when they launch a product that they can't fully get behind because it's not perfect. But I think that is the key. And what I find is when I talk to people, they're like, well, I've had this plan. I've been putting it together for 6 months. I've talked to my accountant and my mother and my uncle and my
paralysis.
They're not
analysis.
Going to be your clients. You have to just take a small leap and go. So
90% of it is showing up.
Interesting. Well, we listen to the Shrimp Tank here on Business Radio X. I'm Ted Jenkin, co-host along here with Chris Hanks today, and we're here with Duffy Realty. Good friends of mine have been for a long time, Rhonda and Frank Duffy. I'm curious that most business owners that I have seen, this may be technical studies too, as you see in the entrepreneurship school, say that one of the biggest reasons for failure is being undercapitalized, that you just simply haven't thought about what it would cost you financially to start a business. So I'm curious about how you got started going into it. Did it cost a lot of money? Were there nervous moments there in the first 6 months about even making money?
We were in the black in our second month.
Yeah, we just took it. We didn't go out with a grandiose idea. I go back to this, but I didn't sit down with a business plan and make it some monstrous thing that I couldn't execute. Does that make sense? I didn't come out
sure.
and say, well, it's got to be this. It's got to be this. I just launched it and made it something that people could grab a hold of. And then as I started making profit, I just kept making it better.
And it was the noticing of a need that actually morphed into what we're doing now, our flat fee business model.
But right. How did that idea come up for a flat fee? Traditional real estate for years.
A client asked me for it.
No kidding.
Yep.
Hmm. And so I went down, Frank was standing at the pantry, and I said, hey, I just got a proposal from a client. He doesn't need this and he doesn't need this. And I said, well, what would you pay MLS. For that? And he said this. And I said, okay, let me go make a decision. I'll call you back in 10 minutes. I went down to Frank, and this is truly the key to our business. Let's give it a go. Yeah. That sounds good.
So Richard Branson always says, let's give it a go.
Yeah. So it's not a pondering thing. You run it through your head and you say, is that legal? Can I do it? Is it something I would do? Is that serve somebody?
And in this case, she just came down and she goes, the guy wants to be in the MLS. I said, what's he willing to pay? She goes, $300. I said, you doing anything the time that he wants you to go out there? She said, no. I said, so go do it. And that's how it all started.
So the reality is you actually started out as a full service real estate firm, and then the clients dictated how the model
a
evolved.
Smaller fee, you know, so we started at a smaller fee than what would be known as the full fee, and then they just ratcheted it down from there, and then 300 wasn't going to be sustainable, but I wanted to see how it felt, right? Yeah. So I went out there, it was a complete train wreck, so I worked from there.
Yeah, we raised the price a little bit.
But I fulfilled my commitment to him.
And we gave more services. We raised the price. We realized very early on that people still need contract negotiating help. So we were able to build that component in. So it wasn't just, you know, strictly, hey, we'll stick you in the listing database and forget about you. There was a professional component that came into it. But, you know, it was us listening to what the client wanted, what the marketplace wanted, that set us in this direction. You know, we started out just to be a little boutique firm because, you know, Rhonda was getting back into the business. And of course, Duffy Realty, with its mass marketing appeal, is the actual opposite from a boutique firm. But we were able to put that in place. And then we realized when we stumbled upon this, how powerful this business model was. You know, and by the way, we call them not full service agents, we call them full priced agents. But we realized that we were able to actually give as many services, if not more, because of the economies of scale and of working with volume. We had the ability to do more things at less of a cost. You know, kind of a Walmart meets Remax meets Charles Schwab approach. And having that ability of doing it in volume, our philosophy is instead of clubbing to death one person for our annual revenue, we'd rather pinprick 1,500. And it's better for them because they have more savings to be able to apply it to the transaction.
That's fascinating to me because sometimes in entrepreneurship, we tend to play by other people's rules. You know, like if the other team scores 4 runs, we feel like we have to score 5 as opposed to how can I just pick up my ball, go home and invent a new game?
Right. Yeah. Right. That's what I was saying. It's kind of like people get so perplexed with the thought of it all or the defeat or the curiosity of it, which curiosity is good. But sometimes it's also that you pick up your ball and then you just throw for 1 run and then you see how that works. And, you know, what I learned from that very first client was how he used the product. And then I was like, I don't like the way he uses that product. So then I rebuilt it, right? But it's amazing to me. And we've had a lot of growth over the years, but there's ideas that we get. Like we got one yesterday and we're like, why haven't we done that before? I mean, it's like reinventing itself every day. Every day it reinvents itself because we're willing and we're open and we haven't carved out just this is our business model and that's the only thing it can be.
I have heard Frank say before that you have to be dumber than a manhole cover not to use this model. So I think that I've stolen that one several times. So I have to say the first time you steal something, you have to say, you know, my good friend Frank Duffy said this. And then after that, you can say, as I always say, then, you know. And
so I'm taking a note that's another check you owe me.
That might be. That's a royalty check.
Milton Berle said there's no new jokes. There haven't been any new jokes since 1700.
You know, I'm curious that when you launch a model like this, and I'm curious about Chris's thoughts on this as well, is that you go out, you create this new model. Now, all of a sudden, you've got this flat fee model. You're starting to steal market share from your competitors. So they start throwing darts at you.
I thought it was axes. I don't know.
I've seen both of you guys, darts and axes.
When Ron and I first started, we used to flip a coin to see who was going to go have to start the car in the morning.
But it's for real. When you change that model and you turn it on its head upside down, then you have the customers that are out there talking to these full-priced real estate agents, and they're saying, oh, well, you don't want to use those guys because they're not going to show your house. They're not going to put photographs up on the internet. They're not going to do any of these things. How do you battle as an early entrepreneur trying to wade through, is this really the idea makes sense? Is this really going to make us money? Are we going to be able to weather the storm from what people say about our business?
Well, the first thing that you have to do, remember what I said, you have to be in love with your client. So your client's going to give you their pain. They're going to give you what they feel. And then if you feel like you can overcome it, get to the end of the conversation, and they're happy, then you're still onto something. But if something is so out of whack, and I'm not just speaking of my model, but something like you have a competitive, and really real estate is a very unique situation because you have to compete and then you have to cooperate. It's really the only industry that's like that, right? So that makes it a little bit more difficult. But I think if you just stay connected, if you say, yeah, well, the real estate agents don't like my model, but the consumer does, and they're the ones that pay my bills, instead of being attached to peers, right? Then it becomes easier to be competitive.
And let's face it, in the light of day, if we have a house that's listed and a traditional agent is working with a buyer client, they still get paid their 2 or 3 or 4% commission if they bring in that buyer. So they still get paid in the model. And so, you know, with the agents that are out there, it's kind of where's the next piece of cheese coming? And so what happens is they're not going to forego that 3% commission if their buyer is a match for our listings. They might talk a big game at a cocktail party and saying, I'd never show a Duffy house. But in actuality, if they have a buyer that's a match, it's in their best interest to bring in the buyer, not counting the fact that it's in the buyer's best interest. You know, if you truly are professing to be, try to be a benefit for your client, you're going to show them any property that's listed out there. So normally the powers of free enterprise took that off the table. Again, what someone might say when there's no money involved is totally different than what, you know, when there's free enterprise.
What would you say for $6,000?
I mean, right.
Almost anything. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the opportunity to market somebody's house for $6,000 commission.
And what's really cool is we flew under the radar when we first started doing this. We didn't name ourselves Atlanta's cheapest listings or discount listings or us.
Yeah.
You know, we made it to where, in fact, we were as benign as we could be. I told our sign maker, please make our logo as like it looked like it was out in front of Ward and June's house back in the 50s, non-threatening, because we didn't want to alienate the agents until all of a sudden they didn't realize they had a behemoth in their midst. And that's exactly what happened. By the time that we got going, it was like, who are these guys? Where did they get all these listings from? And then the traditional real estate agents realized it wasn't about personality anymore. It became about processes. And that's where the power of the model is.
You're listening to The Shrimp Tank here on Business Radio X. I'm here with Chris Hanks and Ted Jenkin, your co-host for today. And we're talking to the Duffys from Duffy Realty. Frank and Rhonda Duffy, number one real estate agent in the country.
Thanks to my clients' success. Remember,
that's right.
It took a client to get me to the number one spot. So I like to say that.
We just didn't put it on our business card like most agents do, get the glamour shot and say, I'm number one. I'm number one.
Well, the mall store still has the same business.
Right.
You know, I'm curious that the internet has changed a lot of things. And also, when we look at the kids that will probably be coming in here and pitching their businesses, social media and the internet has changed a ton. And especially when I look at the real estate business and I think about even in my own industry, that consumers have so much more information at their hands so much more quickly. How did you all evolve from where the business started when the internet was sort of at its beginning to a certain extent and to where it is today and how you evolved your business model? And Chris, I'm curious, as you see the kids coming through the Entrepreneurship Center, how you're teaching them about how to manage social media and internet, which just has a huge impact on your business.
Well, the biggest key that I could tell any business owner once you start getting going is that you have to learn every aspect of your business. You can't send that off to somewhere else. So early on, when I knew that the internet had taken a big chunk out of how business in general was going to be done, I started going to internet seminars, started hanging around with internet people, started learning what, and
taught yourself how to write HTML code.
Right.
Yep.
Write HTML, you know, and so social media, which I taught you a lot about, you know,
yes,
that was
did.
All from going to places where those people hung out. And, you know, I look at businesses, like some of my friends are doctors, and I'll say, you know, unfortunately, you have to be a business owner and a doctor. Right? They don't teach business in doctor school, right? Medical school of any sort.
That's true.
So what I tell every business owner that asks me is that you really have to understand what your accountant does. You have to understand taxes. You have to understand
advertising, marketing.
Right. You can't hand that off to other people. You can hand it off after you have a general idea of what's supposed to be done, right? Because otherwise, you're really putting a lot of the ingredients and recipe for success in somebody else's hands.
Let's face it, we needed volume. For our business model, for a lower cost model, we have to make our money up in volume. And to manage 700, 800, one time we might have had 1,000 listings out there. You can't manage that much business without having technology. If we were traditional real estate agents, we'd have pulled our hair out after 5 listings because they don't understand the use of technology and how that gives you economies of scale and leverage to do the type of business that we do. You tell an agent that some agent in this country has 700, 800 listings, they'll call you a bald-faced liar. But yet, we've carried that average of listings now probably, 7, 8, 9 years? It's because of the volume that we work in, but you can only manage volume with using the internet, with using technology, using software. That's what gave us this ability. We could not have started this business 5 years earlier, and if we would have started it 5 years later, we probably would have missed that sweet spot. It was literally perfect timed for when we came out with technology to do this.
But Chris, don't you agree every person with an idea today at least has to have a basic understanding of how the internet works?
Oh, of course, absolutely. And the internet provides some challenges for some people, but if you think about it, it's created this opportunity where there's never been an easier time to launch a business.
Right. And when you can get opinions from others.
Oh, big
right?
time.
You're not talking about multi-level marketing, you know, just any kind of business.
Any kind of business.
I think I've been invited to about 8 AvoCare seminars in the last month.
Work from home in your boxer shorts.
Exactly. But if you think about it, like when I launched my first business, I mean, I didn't, the internet's created so many, I guess they've sort of leveled the playing field in some ways. For example, I can access a management team easier than ever before through LinkedIn.
Right.
Right. I can access a worldwide customer base very easily. I can throw up a page and just see if my idea is worthy. And if, hey, somebody actually wants to click on it to buy it, then I can figure out how to go create it.
You can market for free.
Absolutely.
That was never done before.
Never, ever done.
And get PR for free today, too.
Yep.
Pretty
hijack stories. Absolutely.
But you can't give that off to somebody else. You have to have the basic understanding of how that works to be successful to utilize it. Because there's a lot of companies out there who they're just guessing. Google's never going to give the code on how they're organically ranking somebody, right? So they're just guessing, just like you. So it still takes your intuitive spirit, your breath on your product to figure it out.
When the downturn in the market hit in real estate in 2008, I can imagine.
Did we have a downturn?
It was a small one.
I mean,
we felt a little bit.
We chose not to participate.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly one of the questions we're getting to here is that, you know, it may have been longer in the cycle for you, but a lot of those business owners that Chris sees come through the school or these entrepreneurs that want to get there, every entrepreneur is going to hit that wall. They're going to get faced with that challenge, that adversity that comes in. Not just necessarily in whether sales are growing, but you could have a point where you're profitable and then it quickly gets to be unprofitable and it starts to shake your confidence. How do you all develop those skills to have that resilient confidence when your initial confidence gets chopped down?
You keep blocking and tackling. You stay with your core. You stay with your business concept, your idea. If you have confidence in it, if you know that it's good for business. And what we did was we just kept doing it. I used to use the analogy when we were in the depths of it in 2010 and 2011. I said, Rhonda, you and I and our staff behind us, we're kind of like in a jungle, a deep, dark jungle. And the canopy is so thick that no light is coming in. It's dark and it's sweaty and we're hitting everything that we've got with machetes and we keep hitting it and our arm is about to drop off. I said, but one day, as long as we keep doing this, we're going to have one big thwack of our machete and all of a sudden you're going to see a beam of light come through the jungle setting and one or two more and then we're going to be out in a field of daisies and we're going to look around and there's going to be nobody else there. Everything cycles in business. The bad times are followed by the good times. Mm-hmm. The winter is followed by the spring. And as long as you keep working and you work smart and you work, again, not in a foolish way,
and you look for opportunities.
But you keep it out there, like our advertising. We spent more money on advertising during the downturn because no one else was out there marketing. That drumbeat was deafening for our business because nobody else was there. We knew that to get the payoff, the time was going to eventually come. 2013, 2014, 2015 have been our three biggest years. The last 2 months of 2012 was when the market turned, propelled us into 2013, 2014, 2015, and they've been stronger. Remember, I used to say, our better days are still in front of us. And I might not even believe it myself, But as long as you kept working at it and you came out the other end, you were going to be much stronger for it. And that's the reason why when the uptick came, and by the way, it was supply and demand. We went from 110,000 houses on the streets of Atlanta down to 30,000, but you still had 6 million people out there looking for their home of their dreams. Supply and demand kicked in. People came in and bought properties. When other people saw properties were being bought, they rushed in because they felt the train was leaving the station. And then the swing came back up. But what happens is if you stay the course during the downturn, if you don't get washed out, then because of that work that you do when things are down, you'll reap that when the market comes back around.
So how did you keep yourself going in that? Like, did you have a mantra or something that kept you going through that dark night of the soul?
Yeah, the alarm clock kept getting up, you know, going off in the morning, and we'd get up. And we knew that our business model was providing a product that, and a service that was of benefit to the consumer because the consumer kept telling us. Now, our numbers, our raw numbers were down like everybody else's was, but we were actually gaining market share during the downturn. The other players were leaving. They were going back into software sales or retiring. But as long as we kept going and kept out there, we were able to do enough business to keep our staff going. And then what wound up happening is as the market turned back around, you know, more people saw that we were successful. We were still advertising. And then agents came to work for us. And you know, we just propelled the model.
I have a different attitude. We have a winter season and it's truly winter. It's right now in real estate, right? The numbers start to go down October, November, December, January. This is the time that we pour a lot of love on our business.
Yeah.
We're looking for opportunities. We're looking for people who are weak. You know, it's kind of like in the jungle. You see all those jungle shows, you know, or the safari shows where they kill the weakest animal. Really, you know, I got into short sales then because I saw that people were so wigged out, the consumer, but the agents too, but the banks, that was an opportunity. So we got into short sales. And so my biggest focus during this time, including in a recession, is to continually grow the people who work for me, keep their mindset, you know, positive, keep it into a bubble, keep them looking for the future, and to pour a lot of love on our processes.
Test new ideas.
Yeah, test new ideas, just get a new idea and realize that we're on top and other people might have a mindset that's fizzling out, but that gives us an opportunity to go in and really take charge and sometimes take their business. Because you can start to see when your competitors
are doubled our market share. During the downturn. We love downturns.
Love winter.
Yeah.
Well, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank here on Business Radio X. I'm Ted Jenkin, your co-host, along with Chris Hanks, who's the founder and executive director at Kennesaw State Entrepreneurship School. Really a growing part of what's happening in the state of Georgia. And I'm just wondering here, an interesting comment here, that why don't they, you know, just having successful owners like the Duffys on today, why is it that they don't have an entrepreneurship track in high schools today? Why is it that at least what I see today, that you just really have, you don't even have vocational stuff. It's just pretty much college preparatory. But there are kids out there with super ideas. And some of us thought that we're challenged, and we probably still are. But, you know, we thought that we were wrong. There was something wrong with us, which probably there is. But how do you bring that out in kids today so they can become successful like the Duffys have been in their business?
Yeah, because historically, like a lot of schools we teach kids sometimes how to fill out those Scantron bubbles, as opposed to how do we sort of critically think and how do we solve problems for others and serve others. Entrepreneurship is becoming a bigger thing in schools nowadays. If you went to a high school class about a decade ago and asked, hey, raise your hand if you want to be an entrepreneur, you'd get at most 10%. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, if you walk into a high school classroom, it's about 70% who would to be an entrepreneur someday. Now, whether or not they do, that's a different story. But teaching entrepreneurship is a challenge in some high schools, partly because it doesn't test very well. It doesn't comply with certain standards and that kind of thing. So we do a lot at Kennesaw State to introduce experiential learning. And I think something like the Shrimp Tank, where we're offering students the experiences of coming in and pitching, the experiences are what change us. It's not the information.
The real world experiences, the real world life. And again, you know, with high schools, it's a lot about rote memorization, as opposed to critical thinking. And I think that's where the ball is dropped. And there's no more critical thinking than in entrepreneurship. Because like I said, when we first started, we're professional gamblers.
Well, I'm curious to hear, for you guys have built tons of employees in your business, tons of successful real estate agents that you've, you know, mentored and grown. And I think for the Shrimp Tank entrepreneur that comes on, has a good idea, actually has a little bit of success, makes a little bit of revenue, and then starts thinking, I'm going to need to hire somebody.
Right.
Which I think can be one of the most challenging things for a new entrepreneur. But you seem to have a very unique talent, Rhonda, I think, for being able to select people and find them and bring them on. So how would you advise someone coming on the tank if they need to get that first employee or two? What do you look for? How do you filter it out to get the right people?
Well, the first thing that every business owner needs to be doing is to document their standard operating procedures. Every task that you do has a set of skills required, right? But it also has a step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, as boring as that is to write. And so if you're prepared with your standard operating procedures, it is easy to push somebody into plug and play, mainly because we have become quite visual. McDonald's now, they don't have a manual where they have any writing. They have all pictures, right? But we've become visual learners. It's not Betty told Betty anymore. We're really not into sound and that sort of thing. We've become, you know, sit down, look at the internet, graphics, whatever, and learn that way, just like how YouTube and the instructional videos on YouTube have become. So most businesses can't hire anyone because they don't have the time. If they're hiring someone, they're busy. They don't have the time to sit down and train somebody, and they have no way to start. So what they end up doing is finding someone that's like them, that they think they're going to get along with, or somebody that they think's right, competent, right, or their mother, or their, you know, whoever's kind of convenient, because they really don't have
a mirror.
They really don't have a plan. And so a lot of the processes that I do for hiring are about, can you follow instructions? And I put people through a process. You know, if you want to apply with us, you fill out a Google form. It ends up on a Google Doc. We send you the invitation to come interview with us. It's a group interview. It shows a lot of, jealousy, insecurities, that sort of thing. Then if they want to join us, they have a next step that they have to do. And if somebody doesn't make it all the way down that sifter, down the funnel to the end, then they're just not for us. So a lot of it's about, do I have someone who's independent enough to think, read? Do they need to ask a lot of questions, that sort of thing?
Curiosity.
Because I'm going to hold them to our agreement, and our employment agreement is going to be based on them reading the material that I wrote and following it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where a lot of these small business owners, and especially people that hire their first employee, where they fail the most is that they hire their best friend, they right. hire a family
Somebody
member.
Somebody out of convenience, because they know they might mess it up.
And it's interesting you bring that up, because I'm curious about how you dealt with this over time, that one of the mistakes, and I'm sure Chris sees this a lot with new shrimp tank type entrepreneurs, is they want to give away the farm. I see these people that develop apps that have advisory boards, and they have all these fancy structures for how they give away equity and everything like that. And by the time they end up building a business, they give away 90% of the business. So how did you deal with that, with retaining people over time as you grew the business?
I don't know. I just wasn't ever willing to give it up. I mean, we've had offers to give it up, but we're like, why would we do that? You know, I don't know. It's just been, as you start to write out your jobs, because you have made a standard operating procedure for each of the tasks that you would be doing, you get a good sense of what that is worth, right? And it's where I started earlier. You have to have a good understanding yourself about what you're asking somebody else to do. But everybody who's run a business A to Z, they know what to do, right? I learned a hard lesson one time. I called the IRS. They were very friendly. I was impressed, okay? But I said, you know, I pay my accountant a lot of money to do that. And she said, Mrs. Duffy, you know, the IRS standpoint here is that if you have an issue or it becomes a question, you're supposed to know what was filled out on that form. We're not going to go to your accountant.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, what? You know, and that I think just has stayed with me. I would never build a department or a job that I'm not familiar enough of what I'm talking about. I would never sit somebody down to software that I haven't at least perused and known myself. Does that make sense?
But
because you give away the farm with inefficiencies and you don't know that the people are inefficient, you just think that's the job, mm-hmm. the time required.
But once you do know it, though, you want to leverage other people, because that's where the power comes in. That's where you can really grow and have exponential results and returns. Everyone in our organization is replaceable, including ourselves. We've replaced ourselves in things that we've done. And now what's interesting is Rhonda and I spend all of our time working on the business, not in the business.
But I know what everybody's supposed to be doing.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's the irony in exit planning and business valuation, because you increase the value of the business the more useless you are to the business.
Right.
But that's counterintuitive and offensive to some entrepreneurs. because I've had actually people brag to me about like, hey, you know what? There's nothing that goes on in my business that I don't have my thumb directly on top of. And I haven't taken a vacation in 5 years.
Yeah,
what
that's
that
not
communicates
a
to me is your operator. Business has no value because without you, the business doesn't survive.
He's an operator, not an owner.
Absolutely.
Well, I know that one of the things, especially as you see these new entrepreneurs, the question is, how much money do I start investing in myself, my own personal growth? And what does that investment look like? And I know that you all in the last several years have been able to be around some of the brightest and best entrepreneurs in the world, been all over the world to see these entrepreneurs. So what would you say for people that are starting out a business that not only from your own business, but what you've learned through these very high-end successful business owners? Are some mistakes that people make in their business that it's not just at the get-go, but when they're building it, that are critical, that if they can catch them early in the process, they can build their business faster, better, quicker as they grow?
Well, I think there's always the balance between your personal life and your business life. If you have a great personal life, you go into business and then you screw up your personal life, then you cause yourself a lot of pain and your business is not going to survive. So you have to stabilize what you're currently working on to add to the business. But I think also you have to have personal growth. It's not enough to have growth inside your business. It's not enough to just learn that you made a sale. You've got to learn about the elements of your business that could enhance it, like I did with the internet and social media. And, you know, I'm always on lynda.com learning something. I'm learning Photoshop right now. You know, it just, those kind of things are your wins. Happiness only comes from one thing, and it's progress. And I learned this sadly when I became number one. I thought there would be a rose parade. I thought, you know, somebody would get in. Oh, yeah. Well,
wear the tunics,
changed.
Wear the chariots.
Nothing
the
changed.
Rose petals.
It is a small incremental progress that equals happiness. If you can take a small win every day, whether it's, you know, something big or something little, it's all a win, and that's what equals happiness. And that happiness is what fuels your ability to control and environmentally change and win in your business.
You know, it's interesting to hear you say that because I think there are a lot of business owners that get stunted in their business and they don't spend the time and energy for that professional or personal development, and it hampers their business
right.
a ton.
They
and,
get tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And they ruin their personal relationships.
Absolutely.
They become workaholics.
And one of my favorite Peter Drucker quotes, and for those who don't know, Peter Drucker is this great management guru, and in business school, we quote him a lot, but he says the bottlenecks are always at the top. So if you don't increase your ability to lead, you are always going to be the bottleneck to your organization.
Correct.
And your business, like what got you to one level 1 year won't get you to the next level the next year.
And that comes from his main principle, which is everything comes down to marketing and innovation. Everything in business, those two things.
Hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank here on Business Radio X. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, and I'm Ted Jenkin. We're here with Frank and Rhonda Duffy talking about Duffy Realty, huge, successful company. Just exciting, interesting information today about how you were able to do this. I'm curious, we want to ask you just a couple of final questions, and then definitely want to let everyone know how they get in touch with you when they're getting ready to buy a home or sell a home, or I also thought I saw that you're number one in short sales as well.
That's correct. And I don't intend to be number two at anything.
That's, well, you know, this is one of the questions that you mentioned in here about this Rose Parade. I'm curious that, you know, once you hit that success, and now you just haven't hit initial success, you've hit big success, number one in the country. It's not number one in your town or in your city. How do you stay motivated, you know, to continue to be the best? It seems like if it's college football or it's business people, that the best people still figure out a way to stay motivated to stay at the top.
After you become the best at whatever it is that you're going to do, it becomes legacy after that. So I want to leave a legacy. I want to affect the people around me. And I know we don't have time to talk about it, but we just gave our company to our employees.
Through an ESOP.
That's pretty cool.
Through an ESOP. Yeah, it is cool. But to me, for me to pass on that ownership mindset, right? What we're talking about, the ownership mindset is so big for me. But, you know, we still continue every day to be even better than we were yesterday.
And I like sports analogies. You know, I kind of associate Rhonda with John Wooden. You know, she's been the number one ranked agent in Georgia now for 11 straight years. We're in the four corner stall with year 12. There's nobody going to touch us here either. And this is again, a repeat championship like Wooden had, only that instead of 110 Division I schools, we're competing against thousands and thousands of competitors. So really, excuse me, what it comes down to, it comes down to almost like being like golf. We're competing against ourselves, not others at this point. We're trying to make ourselves better every day. And really what it comes down to, we've never really chased the money. The money has come, but what we've done is we've chased the game. And when you do something that you really enjoy doing, you know, the benefits will come. So we try to make ourselves better every day, or year over year, or month over month. So the competition is truly against ourselves, not our stature in the marketplace. Though we do like being number one. It's nice.
Yeah. That reminds me of that Walt Disney quote, you know, I don't make movies to make money. I make money to make movies. You know, money is a result of successful entrepreneurship.
Right.
So, and your comment about the best, I was just, sometimes we don't have to be number one to be the best. Like, for example, I want to be the best dad I can be to my kids. That doesn't mean I'm competing against other dads, but the two kids that I have, I have to be the best dad. Maybe I have a company that's only 300 customers. I can be the best to those 300.
Absolutely.
And so maybe I'm not the biggest in my industry, but as long as I'm the best to the people that I'm called to serve, then I can create meaning for them and create a very valuable business for myself.
That's the most important thing. And then all of a sudden, one day you might be the number one in your industry because of the way you approached it.
Well, remember what I said, number one, thanks to my client success, I'm number one to my clients.
Yeah, it sounds like the whole idea of you really are client or consumer focused and they win, and in turn, your business will win.
And that produces raving advocates, and that's exactly what we need to propel the business. You know, we're pretty good at marketing, but our clients are much better at marketing for us.
Yeah, although Chuck Oliver is pretty good.
Yes, he is.
He's pretty darn good. That commercials are outstanding. I'm just curious, the final question on here before we wrap up today is that, Chris might know the statistics, but I think it's still 8 or 9 out of 10 businesses fail. And so the kids that come on the shrimp tank and pitch the idea, the truth is a bunch of them won't make it. And for the one or two that will make it, what would you tell them would be the key qualities that they would need to be thinking about, or the key levers that they would need to pull to be able to be those couple of businesses that hit success?
Curiosity, flexibility.
Do what you know, do what you like.
Love your customer. Show up.
And look.
Show up. Sounds easy, huh?
And look, and here's the thing. Have fun. Go have fun with this. You know, that's the beauty of business. Every day is different. Being an entrepreneur, we make up the rules as we go along. We don't play by other people's rules. And look, not everything works out. We have lots of clunkers, right? But that's the whole thing. You try it. If it doesn't work, you keep trying. You keep trying, and something does work, and all of a sudden your business morphs or your business change. Have flexibility. Have fun. Don't take this all too seriously. I mean, again, you want to go at it with an intent, but you want to have fun with this.
So for people out there that want to buy, sell, and save, people that want to get a good deal on their home, they want the best in the city to be able to do it, and I guess the best in the country.
And they want to make money when they sell, because that's the only reason to buy a house. So if you want to make money, go to DuffyRealtyOfAtlanta.com.
Yeah, and what we do is we list houses.
It's a pretty good website. I've taken a look at it. It's pretty darn. I'm pretty sure that you guys had a hand or two in designing all that, but it's pretty amazing stuff.
And look here, it's $500 flat fee, $100 rental for a lockbox, and we charge 0.75% when it sells. So we're going to save you at least 2% on the sale of your property. And if a buyer comes in on their own and you show them your own property, you save the other 3% as well. So you save 5% of your property value. You can drive a Mack truck through that spread. That's why so many of our properties sell so quickly, is you don't have that agent there with their hand sticking out for 6 or 7% commission. Makes it a lot more flexible. And our philosophy, we'd rather just work with a lot of people. It's better to undercharge 100 people than overcharge one. And that way more people will want to work with you, and they'll tell more people about you. And on the buying side, it's a free service. We even pay people our buyer cash bonus. They get a $500 bonus in most cases just to work with us. And we even have our buyer vacation bonus. So we have the ability to work on both sides of the fence. And like Rhonda said, we do short sales as well. So if you're in a financial situation and your house is not worth the amount that you owe on it, but you need to sell and you can't wait around to see if it's going to come back. We can, you know, service you for free, cost you nothing. And the law firm that we have working for our clients, that's also free of charge.
Well, we want to thank the Duffys for coming on today. We've learned some unbelievable stuff today. I always love the quotes. To drive a Mack truck through that spread. There's another one that I'm stealing.
A tweetable moment.
You need to write a book on that. There'd be some good royalties in there for that. But truly thank you for your time today. This is what the Shrimp Tank is all about. You're going to be able to see in the upcoming months and years on this show, not only young students and college-educated kids that are coming in and pitching their ideas and the do's and don'ts and bringing those ideas to market, but successful business owners that are growing their business or have built very successful businesses. Those are the people to learn from. In a couple of weeks, stick around on December 15th. Mark it down on your calendar. We'll be bringing in Tom DiGregorio. And for those of you that ever thought, would it be a good idea to get into waterproofing basements? Can I actually make any money on that? Boy, you're going to hear from a guy that's made more than a few shekels taking care of people's basements. So we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks so much for the Duffys for joining us and Chris for hanging out today. And thanks for coming on the Shrimp Tank.